Live from the Ghost Hunter Store. Brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Hayes.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. This is a pre-recorded show because we needed to get our guest the day before we aired. But this is a very special show. Our guest tonight is Gary Galka. For those of you who do not know who he is the inventor of the Mel Meter, the REM Pod, and many of the other pieces of equipment that were built specifically for people in the paranormal field. As far as I am aware, he is the first person that, on a large scale, designed and built things for the paranormal field. Recently, he appeared on Ghost Adventures and spoke about the death of his daughter, which is one of the things that spurred him to look into the paranormal and try to help people, including investigators, make connections with the other side. And there's been some blogs and responses since his appearance there that have left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths and have been hurtful to the Galka family. And instead of focusing on the negative, which is originally how I kind of anticipated this show would be, and calling out some of the people as bullies, I think you really need to listen to Gary's message. And hear what he says in his own words about his daughter, Melissa, and how and why he does what he does. I think it'll definitely change your point of view. And I know it moved me and Marty in ways that we had not expected. So here's our interview with Gary Galka.
Let me start with a disclaimer that I am not affiliated with Ghost Adventures in any way. I don't know Zach or any of those people. I do know you, Gary, for years, I guess, since you invented the first Mel. I do know Dave Schrader. I met him just in Gettysburg. And I know Jeff Ballinger. I appeared in a book of his about 8 years ago. So there's the disclaimer for whoever wants to put that stuff out there that, you know, there's no money exchanging hands, and I'm not on a payroll by Ghost Adventures or anything like that. I really don't even watch the show. So why don't we start with, I guess, the story of Melissa and how that developed into you deciding to create equipment for people in the paranormal field.
Well, you know, the story's been told a lot of times, you know. In general, you know, the beginning and how it happened and everything. I'm going to take it back a little bit further for you, okay?
Okay.
So I'm going to talk about things leading up to the accident so that everything is addressed and everything is out in the open, because for some reason people have focused on areas of, for lack of better words, areas of non-interest to me and my family, i.e. the accident itself. I mean, when you live through that accident, you don't want to rehearse or repeat that or review that in your mind. It's not something that parents want to relive. And for some reason, there are those individuals that have looked at that as a form of interest, okay? And it tends to be the individuals that have a different perspective or opinion on afterlife. But you know, Dave, the whole show was designed with one intention. It didn't come about by Zach contacting me or the production company contacting me. My communication with Melissa has been ongoing for several years.
This is referencing the Ghost Adventure show that appeared, featuring you and your wife talking about what happened with Melissa and showing how you communicate using the ESP7.
Right.
Absolutely. Just so everyone understands what we're talking about here.
Yeah, you know, we had the episode on Ghost Adventures, and what happened was I called Zach, and I said, Zach, listen, you know, I'm getting to the point where Melissa seems to appear eager to share certain things with me. She's talking to me through the SB7 spirit box. She's talking to me through the RTVP. So from my point of view, some of the outstanding questions that many of us have about the afterlife, I've actually had, the honor, the access to many of those answers. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to share that with people in order to help them, have a better understanding. But more importantly, I wanted them to be able to feel some sense of healing the way that we had through these experiences. And, it never dawned on me to address the accident or anything like that. I just wanted to focus on the positive things, the things that would help other people. And that's pretty much what I've been doing over the past several years. But let's regress. Let's go back in time a little bit here. It was it was the night of the 24th. I got up in the morning. Melissa was in her bathroom. Actually, it was the day of the 24th for school. Melissa was in her bathroom. Normally, I see her in the morning. Normally, I give her a hug as I go downstairs to have breakfast and stuff like that. She was in the bathroom. The door was shut. I went downstairs, had my breakfast, cup of coffee. I came upstairs. By that time, the bathroom door was open, and now her bedroom door was shut. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm coming to the top of the stairs, crap, I didn't have a chance to see her, and now I'm going into the shower getting ready for work. So that morning, although I had a chance to say goodnight to her the night before, that morning I never saw her. And the next activity after school was a soccer game. Soccer game was right after school, got over at 6 p.m. or so. Melissa and all of her core girlfriends and some of her boyfriends, some of the team members, all went to a house where they had a get-together. It was a Friday night. Now, during that get-together, to no shocker to a lot of the parents who might be listening to this, there was alcohol. Now, there was, Melissa had a couple of drinks early on. That's been verified. I didn't know about it until I saw the police report about 2.5 weeks ago. So she had a couple of drinks with her friends. She had a good time. I'm very happy that she had a good time. And as far as the alcohol consumption goes, it was a six-hour party. She had a couple of drinks the first 2 or 3 hours, and then she stopped. Now, I have to say, Dave, in all honesty, I've been there, and I've done all that with my friends. And if any parent is naive enough to believe that their kids don't do those kinds of things, they better open their eyes, because it does happen.
I think every teenager does something like that. I mean,
absolutely.
It's commonplace.
I've had situations where they've gone to concerts, you pick your child up, you make sure that they get home okay, or, whatever. For me, it was always you try to teach your kids the difference between right and wrong. You try to instill good values. You try to instill a certain sense of responsibility as they get older. And I always stayed up for Melissa. I always checked her out when she came in the house. I always looked into her eyes. I always took the time to have conversation with her to make sure that she was straight or she was okay. But I did that with all my kids. It was just... policy. It was procedure. It was normal procedure. And I'll tell you why it was normal procedure, because no one ever did that for me when I would come home, And it wasn't uncommon. Back when I was in high school, drinking age was 18, and then they changed it to 21. So back when I was 18, I'd be out partying with my friends and going to clubs and whatever, picking up girls, whatever the case may be. And no one ever put any emphasis on drinking and driving, and it's kind of like how things change with smoking. Back in those days, you go to a club, everybody was smoking, you come home reeking like cigarette smoke, and nobody thought anything about it. Now, my God, you got to go outside, have smoke, you got to do all kinds of things. I never, funny thing is, for 35 years now, I don't drink or smoke. So, all those things that you do as a child, once you get your life on course and you have a family or you grow up or whatever you got to do to become more mature, and usually it's from learning and experience, you know, life changes, right? You always want to set a good example for your kids. So I never drank or smoked. My wife doesn't drink or smoke. She may have a glass of wine occasionally, but, you know, we try to live by example. So everything that we would do is by example, through example.
Right. I mean, Marty is a teenage girl, so yeah, she understands.
I go through the same thing, and I, you know, she's 18. She just turned 18, so I, you know, I go through the same routine every night myself.
Right, and you know, it's like anything else. I mean, you look at the way that you were raised. I always tend to look at the way things were, and I tried to make them different for my family. So, you know, there was a night that went by that I didn't say goodnight. I love you to all three of my daughters. You know, I'd walk into the room, kiss them on the forehead, and then go to bed. And I never got that when I was growing up. You know, my parents didn't give me that same kind of attention or you know, the things that I gave the kids today. And I think that as a society, I think that we've all changed over time, because we all want the best for our family and the kids, you know, and we always try to give them the things that we didn't have growing up. So Melissa was at this party, and as she, you know, about 3 hours before coming home, you know, she had basically a long period of time where she didn't have any drinks, and she didn't have any alcohol or anything in her system. So she hopped in the car, and she was driving home. There was a friend driving in front of her, and that friend began to speed as he entered onto our primary road. And he was driving an SUV, and Melissa was driving a little four-cylinder Toyota Corolla, and she was trying to keep up with him. She swerved to the left, and then the car swerved sharply to the right, and then it plowed into a tree. Now, when we were at the hospital, well, let me address this. I at that point I was standing up in my house at the window, and while I was there, I sensed that something had gone wrong. You know, I was waiting for Melissa. I jumped out of bed. I got dressed. And I was waiting for her, and then we got a frantic knock on the door, and it was one of Melissa's friends that was driving behind her, and because they all live in our development, and she said Melissa was in an accident. So I rushed to the scene of the accident. I got there. The police informed me that she had compound fractures of both legs. I didn't dare look. I just looked at her face, held her hand, and tried to reassure her that everything would be okay, which is the same thing any parent would do.
Definitely.
And I just squeezed her hand a little bit. I felt a little squeeze on my finger from her. And the police then tried to get me away from her, and I wouldn't. I just didn't want to leave her. And they threatened to throw me in the back of a police car if I didn't back off, because they had to use the jaws of life to extract her from the vehicle. So a lot of the pictures that you saw during the show, they were actually the car that had been ripped apart by the jaws of life to get her out.
Right.
You know, so it made it look and appear a lot worse than it really was. But, I mean, it was bad when I was there. Now, when the police were there, the boy that was driving in front of Melissa went into shock. He was basically, you know, sitting in the road in shock. The vice principal of the school lived right behind where the tree was, so she came down. She was comforting him. The boy that was in front of Melissa was Melissa's boyfriend, and he was escorting her home. But in this case, you know, he felt, as any boy under the same situation, he felt a lot of responsibility and guilt that he caused the accident by speeding. So, you know, there's not much you can do. I looked at him. I looked at the car. I said to him, this is, you guys have to be doing 50 or 60 miles an hour. And he acknowledged that he was doing about 50 or 60 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. And I knew that my life was about to change forever at that point. I mean, the accident was just so bad. Melissa's face was untouched. The airbag prevented that. She did not have a seatbelt on. And from there, my wife and I went to the hospital. My wife was sick most of the night, as any parent would probably be. And at one point during the night, I was summoned to the operating room just prior to surgery. They said Melissa was awake. Now, on the route from the accident scene to the hospital, Melissa gave them her complete name, her age, her date of birth, and her address. Okay, so this is what the paramedics told me.
Okay.
So she was conscious enough to give them all the important details and conscious enough for her to talk to them. When I got to the hospital, we were in a waiting room for quite a while as they were trying to clean her wounds and try to prepare her for the surgery of her legs. And they told us, they said things would get worse before they got better. So, you know, we were hopeful. The fact that she talked while she was in the ambulance, we were very hopeful and tried to maintain a positive outlook on the whole situation. And I went into the room as she was laying there. She looked at me, and, you know, I looked at her, and I walked up to her, and she said a few words to me. And I kissed her on the forehead, and I told her I loved her. And she closed her eyes, and the nurse says, "We have to get her to surgery now." And that was the last I saw her or heard from her. Until all these beautiful things started happening, because, you know, she came out of surgery and she was kind of like in a coma, and the doctor met with my wife and I, and he said that the ETOH, the toxicology report, came back negative. So what they did was they gave me the actual reading, they gave me the paper, and they said the ETOH was less than 10 milligrams per deciliter. Less than 10 is negative. 10 and above, 10 plus, I should say, is a trace. And then
she was well, just to clarify that, she was well below a trace amount.
No, she was negative. There was nothing.
Oh, so she was negative completely then.
Completely negative. And 80, anything above 80 would have been drunk driving.
Okay.
So she came out less than 10, and the only thing that concerned me about 2.5 weeks, and so, Dave, I never had cause to go and get a police report. I never wanted to read it, because all I cared about was I didn't know all the details of the party. I didn't know a lot of stuff. I just knew what I saw and what I was part of. And really, so when I tell people that she wasn't drunk driving, I was telling people based on what the doctor told me. It's not what, you know, what the police report said.
Right.
And you know, to me, that was good enough. So this whole thing started when some girl, some person, I don't know if it was a girl or a boy, but she, in a blog, posted a picture of the accident and said Gary Galka hides the fact that his daughter was drunk driving. And I never hid anything. There was no conspiracy. I just didn't have a reason to address that, since the show is really about the beauty of a physical relationship that you have with a child, and then that same physical relationship carries over into the afterlife. And for me, this whole thing was just so amazing. It's still unbelievable that I'm able to do this. So I wanted to share that with people, because I've seen so many broken hearts, so many bereaved parents, and yet it's helped us to heal to such a level that, you know, I'm really a strong person today. I don't want people to think that, you know, that we did the show and I'm a broken man and everything else. No, the things that have happened to me have put me into a very strong position, and that position enables me to reach out and help other people. That's all I really want to do.
I think just so, doing the show and the way you, even just how you first started creating the paranormal equipment so that every paranormal investigator could make that connection with equipment created specifically for us in the field, that shows, you know, the strength that you've gotten from this experience.
And I've been criticized for funneling my background, my engineering background, or my skills, or however you want to look at it, into an area that is actually criticized by many people. And they said, you know, Gary Zulka should be addressing and lecturing about drunk driving issues, and, you know, not wasting his time on designing these toys for paranormal people. And I don't look at it that way.
But if, know, I mean, if your daughter wasn't drunk driving, that kind of makes no sense for you to be out on the lecture
right,
circuit
but,
talking
but
about it.
But even if my daughter was drunk driving, or if she was on drugs, it really wouldn't matter what the circumstances were. You know, my heart would still be shattered. I would feel like I was let down by my daughter after all of the important values and things that I taught her. But then I'm not a hypocrite either, because I did a lot of these things. But I never told her I did these things as a kid, you know. But then, you know, I just didn't want anything to be misunderstood by people. And for me, you know, when she started helping us with after-death ADCs, after-death communications, by turning on the radio and flipping the channel on the television and tapping me on the shoulder in the middle of the night two or three times to wake me up, and coming on the bed and my wife feeling her and me feeling her at the same time, and her sitting on the edge of the bed and me feeling the bed go down and the weight on my leg, and then feeling her lower head on my chest, and then me physically moving my hand through her spirit energy. And it wasn't my physical hand. It was like my out-of-body hand. I mean, all these cool things that, you know, were happening to me and happening to my wife. And my younger daughter saw Melissa three times brushing her hair in front of the mirror. How do you explain that? And so, you know, with all these beautiful experiences, I'm not going to turn a blind eye to that kind of stuff. There's something happening that most people will never have the privilege of experiencing. I was experiencing it firsthand, and I wanted to embrace that. Why shouldn't I embrace it? These are things that are meant to happen for some purpose in my life. And from there came some of this innovation and some of these ideas that started popping into my head. And all I wanted to do with this equipment, really, the truth of the matter is, all I wanted to do with this equipment was share equipment with the people that had a true passion for it, so that they might be able to either glean new experiences, get information, or even reach the same level of peace and acceptance that we were able to achieve. That's all I really wanted to do. People say that you really want to hurt my feelings. All you got to do is say, you know, you're capitalizing on the death of your daughter, and you're using this equipment to profit. The people that say those things really don't know me. And that's the sad part, because people are making these assumptions or they're speculating on what my motives are, but my motives are really pure. My motives are pure of heart.
I think that was one of the most disturbing things in the blog post, because it's talking about the show, and it even mentions that you help other families generously, and then it goes... One vital question that was not answered was the cause of the car accident. What does that have to do with the paranormal? And then it goes on to basically belittle Dave Schrader and Jeff Bellinger's reputations along with yours. Post the police report on there that they claim was unedited. But it, like when I had spoken to you earlier, that the police report does not put the readings, alcohol readings or the toxicology readings on the public available report. Only the parents get that.
You're correct. What happened was when people started posting these things, it will start off with the blogger who has since collapsed. It all started by a social media website called city-data.com. If you go to city-data.com, you'll see that they compile statistics. A lot of their data entry is done in India. They have statistics on every town, municipality, state. It could be how many schools are in a certain district, how many red cars are in a certain town, your proximity of a school to a fire department or a police department. All these statistics are there. And if you were to type in Google, if you were to type in Granby, Connecticut car accidents 2004, all the car accidents that occurred in our town in 2004 will pop up. Well, Melissa's accident is listed there, but it's not listed by her name. It's listed the time, the street, and everything else. And at the very end, it said car accident, fatal, and then one drunk driver. So really, the person or the people that started this whole thing was this city-data.com. Now, the sad part about city-data.com, it's owned by one person, and they have several lawsuits against them for erroneous data that has been entered, and people have been trying desperately to change and get things updated correctly.
Right.
I had to get a lawyer involved. The lawyer was armed with the documentation, the police report, and the toxicology report, and they basically had to go after city-data.com. It took 1 week for my lawyer to take that down and get it corrected. And then as soon as that was corrected, the blogger who was relying on this crap, okay, as fact, collapsed and then posted a half-ass apology.
My question is that I've never heard of that site personally. They were looking for dirt, basically, to disparage.
The blogger was looking for dirt.
They were looking for a reason to disparage what you do. Which, again, people who don't understand it or just can't simply wrap their mind around it or whatever you want to call it, I always say there's good people and there's bad people, there's good and evil. You do so much good with what you've done with the equipment and how you help other people that there has to be a counterbalance, that there has to be an evil side and an attack upon you, and that's what I look at this as.
Yeah, somebody has to try and shoot it down, but the good work.
Because they were specifically looking for that data.
Mm-hmm.
They were specifically trying to mislead people with that.
Yeah. Well, basically the blogger was calling me a bunch of names. I don't really care if people want to call me names, or they have their opinion. I was always raised to respect other people's opinion, but they should do the same for me. And, the one thing that annoys me is when people incite, this furor over things that are just not true, or they take and distort the truth in order to create some kind of redirection or focal point onto themselves or maybe their website or something like that. I don't get involved with that. I don't do Facebook. I don't do Twitter. I don't like to get involved in all that stuff. And as far as the equipment goes, the equipment that I build, I do this because I want to do it. It's not because I have to do it to survive. And I think a lot of people, they don't realize where I'm coming from. I've been in business for over 30 years in the industrial and commercial sector of the market. I deal with engineers. I deal with production people, manufacturing people, quality inspectors, OSHA. I deal with all kinds of people in these industrial sectors. So, for me to then evolve into this paranormal thing, it wasn't because I saw a profit to be made. It was because my heart was leading me in that direction, and that's what Melissa wanted me to do. So,
I mean, even just the overall paranormal equipment side of your business is a small fraction of what your business is.
Yeah, and how many times have I told you that, Dave?
Exactly, that's why.
I've told you off the record many times, Dave, the paranormal stuff is so small, and you kind of like snap back at me a couple times because it's important to you, but I looked at it and I said, it's such a small part of my business, and I hate pressure and I hate stress, and one thing that happens is when people start clamping down on me, for things, and they have to have this and they have to have that for an event or something, I start to withdraw, and I'm like, this is not the way it's supposed to be for me at this point in my life. So, the equipment that I create, and I have a lot of stuff that I haven't even released yet. I could release stuff over the next 10 years and not have to design anything. That's how much stuff I have in the background just waiting for time. And that time may never come. But the point is, the things that I design and I build in this area, I give back. Every single sale that I make, I take a third of the profits and I funnel those into grief support groups. I funnel those into historical landmarks. Well, you know that. How many times have I been approached, can you donate this, can you donate that for this auction to help Fort Mifflin or whatever? I always do it.
Right, and that's what I think people out there need to know, that this is
what you do. Remember the time I gave $1,000 worth of stuff for Fort Mifflin? You know,
yes.
I mean, and I've done it more than once for more than one organization. And, you know, I've given away 360 millimeters in the past 4 years, just giving them away to people. It could be a youth group or a young kid that's 9 years old. I've given millimeters and SB7s to because he has a passion and an interest at 9 years old. I'm like, man, if he's like that at nine, what's he going to be like when he's 15 or 16? You know?
Exactly.
So I look at that and I send him stuff. I send the kid stuff. And you can actually see the kid, you know, putting YouTube videos up about the millimeter and stuff. And it's so exciting, you know, when someone, a 9 year old, has that kind of passion, or 8 year old. So I'm certainly not going to turn my back on people like that. You know, I want to support people. And, you know, my love right now is helping other bereaved parents, because since the show, you know, the big thing that's happened is I met with a family that lost their son in Afghanistan. They live up the street from me. And I said to the mom, I said, I want you to watch, this is a Thursday, the show is on Friday, I want you to watch the show tomorrow. And she said that she would watch the show with her family. And Melissa knew this boy that was killed. And I wanted them to see it and see, hopefully it would give them some sense of peace, knowing that their son was okay. I got in the car and I left the driveway and I'm driving home. And I turned on the RT while I was in the car. I said, Mel, I said, I just met with Richie's mom. If I was to meet with her, can you connect me with Richie so he can talk to his mom? And she said, yes. So I'm like, can you help me do that with other kids? And she said, yes. So I said, okay, I'm going to take you up on that. And ever since then, I've been addressing and answering every call, every email I've had from people who are bereaved parents who want to know if their child is okay. And to date, I've contacted 100% is my hit rate. I have never not been able to reach a child. And I record the voices and the messages from the children on the RT, and then I give the files to the parents. And some of the letters that I've got from these parents after getting these files, it makes me realize that this is the purpose. This is the purpose. This is where everything has led to this point in time in my life. This is my calling right now.
And again, this is something I know, because you've talked to me about this before. This isn't something the general public knows. This isn't something you were doing to promote your RTEVP or to make money from. You were trying to help other grieving families who experienced similar pain as you did.
Which is an amazing gift.
Exactly. Amazing. No, I don't, Dave, I don't, you know, when the show aired and stuff, they wanted to do a lot more about the products. And I said, no, you can't do that. I don't want any connection. I don't want to mention, you know, my background. I didn't want anything because that's really not important. But then, you know, Zach said, but it is important, because everything, all your experience have led you to building this equipment, which has helped so many people. And then it's led you to this point in your life. And I'm like, I felt really funny. You know, I felt really funny. That's why I didn't see any millimeters during the show. You know, they came to the shop. That's okay. A lot of it was, you know, kind of lean in that area, which is okay. A lot of outtakes, a lot of things I told the production people. And the other thing too is, a lot of people are saying, "Oh, you were paid for the show." No, you don't get paid to do a show like that. What they do,
I can testify to that.
Yes, I can.
Sorry.
Been on lots of shows and never been paid yet.
Never been paid. Nope.
No, you don't. What they offer, first off, you know, Ghost Adventures is such a successful show. And what they do is, wherever they go, they offer the owner of the location what they call a site or location fee. And I was offered a location fee. It was $4,000. I'll be happy to tell everybody. It was $4,000. And I told production people of Ghost Adventures, of Mike Tapel Entertainment, I said, I don't want any of that money. I said, I don't even want you to send me a check. I said, what I want you to do is I'll send you an email with where I want all that money to go. So what I did was I took the money and I said, I want, you know, $500 to Compassionate Friends, $500 to The Cove, $500 to Mary's Place, and $2,500 will go to Melissa's Memorial Scholarship Fund, which helps helps disadvantaged kids, okay, who are struggling with some level of adversity in their life. It could be the loss of a parent during the school year. It could be a mom suffering through breast cancer and she's in the hospital, and maybe they need gas money to get back and forth to the hospital. Maybe the dad's unemployed. Maybe they need groceries. Maybe they need jackets for the winter time. Maybe they need a turkey for Thanksgiving. It didn't matter to me how the money was used, as long as it was used to give back to somebody in need. And then every year, my wife and I, every year, we get on a stage for Memorial Scholarship Award Program, and we give out about $3,000 a year, much of which is out of our own pockets, to two kids every year. So, and it's $3,000 total. So I'll give $1,500 to one kid, $1,500 to another kid. And it's in Melissa's name. And the funny thing about how things work, Dave, in life is one of the recipients, a young man, his name was Ryan, he was the recipient of one of Melissa's Memorial Scholarship Awards. And a year and a half after receiving that scholarship award, he died. And the letter that he wrote to me, the handwritten letter that he wrote to my wife and I, a beautiful handwritten letter thanking us how much it's going to change his life in a community college. He'll pay for his books and this and that. A year and a half later, he passed away. My wife and I went to, hold on a second. My wife and I went to his funeral, his wake, and we gave his mother the letter for her to read. And about 3 weeks ago, she contacted me. She said, Ryan's one-year anniversary is coming up. She goes, do you think that you could help me find out if Ryan is okay? She lives in the next town. So I said, sure. I said, Wendy, are you sure this is what you want to do? Are you strong enough to meet with me? You know, on the one-year anniversary. She said, I think I can do this. She goes, the show really inspired me. She goes, I know he's okay now, and I just want to talk to him. So I invited her over to our house, and we had one of the most remarkable sessions with him for 45 minutes. He spoke to us. He told us things that would just blow your mind, Dave. Just blow your mind. You know, just before he died, he was in Alaska fishing. And I always try to keep my sessions with these kids upbeat because they're so happy.
Right.
And, you know, they're really, really happy where they are. And I said, hey, Ryan, I said, I bet you go fishing all the time. He goes, I do go fishing. He goes, I do go fishing. And then I said to him, I said, Ryan, I said, do you ever see Richie? Now, Richie is the kid I mentioned earlier that I went to his mom's house. I said, make sure you watch the show. He died in Afghanistan. And they were friends. He goes, I was at Richie. This is an actual response. I was at Richie's house yesterday. Okay? Now, as I'm playing these through the Alpha Glancing speaker to the mom, who's hearing all these responses, my wife, Cindy, looks at me and she goes, do you know what yesterday was? Yesterday was Sunday. We met with the mom on a Monday. She goes, yesterday was Richie's birthday.
Oh, wow.
So now, put all these pieces together in your head. Okay, so here's Ryan, and here's Richie, and they cross from the hereafter. They went to Richie's house to be with his mom on his birthday. How beautiful is that?
Right. I mean, that's
it's pretty incredible, isn't it?
That's what when you first called me about all this with the post and the blog, I probably reacted exactly like you did. I was very angry. I kind of almost envisioned doing. I was going to write an open letter on Facebook to the people that were putting this stuff out. I decided not to do that. You know, I was because the way that you approach everything, you do keep everything positive, and you know the law of attraction, like attracts like.
Very upbeat, yeah.
Yeah, as long as you keep maintaining that positive, you're going to attract the positive. And you're not only attracting the positive, you're sharing that with so many other people, so many other families.
Yeah, how many people are you helping there?
Yeah, there's the whole point, I guess, is one of the responses. I had a mom and a dad. The dad is a police officer in Saugus, Massachusetts. They lost their son in a motorcycle accident. And I invited them to our house after talking to them and giving them I don't need to meet with anybody to connect with their loved ones. I can meet with anybody from anywhere. And I know that sounds kind of odd, but all I have to do is tell Mel a name and where they're from, and within seconds, I'm connected with that person. So I first connected with this young man. His name was Dan. And I gave the parents the responses from him. And then it was about 2 or 3 weeks later, I invited them to our house for a barbecue. It was a Saturday afternoon. They showed up around 12. They stayed at my house for 6 hours. Around 6 o'clock, I said, well, let's talk to your son. And let's have Mel connect us. And it's funny because when it started off, I said, hey, Mel, how you doing? And she actually activated the REM pod to let me know that she was ready to talk. But I said, I hope you weren't waiting a long time. Now, Melissa's personality is the same as it was before. And she goes, yeah, we have been. You know, it's like one of those things. It's like, yeah, we have been waiting a long time. And so we started the session. It lasted 45 minutes. During that session, a lot came out. A lot of stuff came out. You know, I was sharing with them certain things about certain situations. And, you know, I mentioned things to them about the accident, things that I considered private, but I felt very comfortable. They shared a lot of things about their children. I never asked parents how their child died. I mean, I've met with some parents whose children have passed as a result of suicide and they're taking their own lives. It doesn't matter to me. You know, I look into their eyes and I just, you know, the tears are all the same. It doesn't matter how your child passed.
Exactly.
And, we had this wonderful session. And, you know, Melissa came through loud, the son came through loud and clear, and, you know, the types of things that are important to the parents, just hearing that they're okay, and when you hear them say, I love you, Dad, or I love you, Mom, or I love you, Mom and Dad, and you can hear that, forget about it. Okay, at that point in time, your life changes forever, mm-hmm. Okay? And the parents, when they hear somebody talking, and I looked at the dad, Jeff was his name. Still very good friends with him. I've invited them over to get together again. They're just nice people. And these are salt-of-the-earth kind of people that you want to maintain a relationship with. I mean, last night, a family that I helped in Avon invited Cindy and I out to dinner, and I didn't expect them to take us out. They took us out to dinner and paid for it. I'm like, wait, you know, you guys don't have to pay for my dinner. But no, you've done so much for us. We're paying you back for what you did for us. And I'm like, wow, that's really nice, but I certainly didn't expect it, you know. But, I mean, it's just the way people are, you know, when you help other people. One of the things Melissa said during that session with Jeff was, I looked at Jeff and Fran, the parents, and I said, you know, please, I'm not trying to be insensitive by what I'm about to say to you, but I'm going to try to say this as sensitive as I can. I said, in many ways, the tragedy that we've faced, I somehow feel that it might be good for us. And Melissa's response, at that instant, Melissa says, it is, Dad. Helping others will open the door to heaven.
Mm-hmm. Okay? That's what people don't understand about God and why things are allowed to happen. There's a reason for everything, and sometimes we're not going to understand, or we're not capable of understanding the bigger picture. But in circumstances like what you just explained, it's you're getting that affirmation that you were right. This is something taking something bad and turning it into something good.
Yeah,
I mean, so right then and there, everything that didn't make sense to me suddenly made sense just from hearing that response from her. And I knew that I was on the right track. So here I am doing all these things because it made me feel good inside. But then for her to confirm that that the path that I'm on is the right path that I'm on. That really made a big difference for me. And I remember at Christmas time, just before we, for the first time in my entire life, we went on vacation at Christmas time this year, this past year. And we had everybody over before we left. And I said to Melissa, I said, am I on the right path? And she responded, yes, you are. Yes, you are. So that's all I need to know. You know, so when people criticize or condemn or they want to try to hurt me and all these other things, you see, they're not really hurting. They're not really hurting my soul, okay? They're just hurting my feelings, okay? And there's a part of me that is really immune to that kind of an attack. But in many respects, all of those safeguards that you have as a parent growing up, you know, the protection, protecting your wife, protecting your children, your whatever, okay, your loved ones, you never lose that even when your child is gone. And now more than ever, because I know that Melissa really isn't gone, I still have those same feelings of protection. And unfortunately, she's not here to protect herself, so I keep telling her, I said, I have to do this for you, honey, you know, because you've done so much to help me. And so that's kind of like where we are with this whole thing.
I really appreciate you coming on to talk to us. I know it's you've spoken about it many times, publicly and privately. But I think in this instance, it was because of, you know, just a few small people out there that this will help people understand more of what happened and why you do what you do. I think it's going to be a huge eye-opener. That, along with that episode of Ghost Adventures combined, will enable people to see the true motivation and the reality behind all this.
And being able to listen to the last portion of this, I think it'll help a lot of other people that you don't make physical contact with heal too.
Right, when they can hear another parent say that, you know, they've come to grips and understand that there's something
that they're still there, and
And I, you know, I look at this whole life experience as just what it is. I mean, it's all I can do. Do you miss that physical relationship with your child? You'll always miss that in your heart. You know, you can never get that back. But knowing what I know, and knowing and being able to share that with other people, to give them that same sense of peace within themselves, it really does have an effect on how well you readapt and rebuild your life. And you know, I'm not trying to create some kind of artificial feeling here or some false sense of security with somebody. You know, there are things here that I can prove, and unfortunately, no one. And I would really love for somebody to challenge me on any of the things that I've said. I have so many incredible responses from Melissa that if anybody who listens to this recording wants to challenge me for the sake of charity, okay, to either qualify a forensic lab, anybody who wants to challenge any of my recordings or conversations with any of these children, I still have the recordings on the original recorder, never taken off, because at some point in time, I think that might happen. And, you know, every recorder has a fingerprint. It's very unique.
Right.
So all those recordings are authentic. For the sake of charity, if anybody wants to put money on the table, up to $10,000, there's got to be somebody who might listen to this with a ton of money who just doesn't believe in what I'm doing. I would love for an opportunity like that, because that would open up the door to a lot of controversy, and controversy opens up the minds of many, many people. So there's no takers. I even challenged this Ron Tebow, who put that information on the website. You know, I said, Ron, you don't believe me, okay? You think that it's all in my head, it's all emotional distress or whatever. I said, I'm willing to put $10,000 on the table right now for charity, that what I'm telling you can be proven. And I said, you know what? Forget the files that I currently have. I'll do it in the lab from scratch with a brand new recorder right in front of your face. So if anybody wants to challenge me in that level, I'm open for it.
Be interesting to see if you get any takers on that.
Yeah.
I doubt you will.
No, I don't think so.
But Gary, it's been great talking to you.
Likewise, Dave.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for sharing everything with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Well, thanks for giving me the opportunity to get into a little more detail. Hopefully it takes away some of the uncertainty that some people might have what really happened, you know?
I think it's going to make a huge impact. Thanks again.
All right, have a great afternoon.
You too.
You too.
All right, we'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
I hope you were as moved by Gary's interview as we were. And I hope if you come across any people that happen to be talking about this story in an insensitive way, that maybe you'll refer them to this interview. Now, Gary's given us a clip that he would like us to play of one of the answers Melissa actually gave during one of his sessions. You'll hear his question. The response that she gives is, "Tell Mommy it's great." And the "it's great" really jumps out at you.
So after reading the report from the hospital, it didn't show that you had any alcohol in your blood.
Oh, no, that's great.
So after reading the report from the hospital, it didn't show that you had any alcohol in your blood.
Oh, no, that's great.
So after reading the report from the hospital, it didn't show that you had any alcohol in your blood.
Oh, no, that's great.
Thank you for tuning in again this week. Remember, you can always catch our podcast on ParanormalStraightTalk.com. And we're going to have a great lineup of guests coming up. We have a new show producer, Taryn, and she's been booking a lot of guests. We have Bruce Tango coming up, Danielle Arnold, Carol Dougherty, Billy Bean, Ben Hansen, the list goes on. So, see you next week.